Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM with Spry Finance. Keep living the life you love.
You're very welcome, firstly. The author of a book called So Once Was I, which is Forgotten Tales from Glasnevin Cemetery. I have to say, now we're going to talk about a lot of people, music people and all the rest of it, but your story about the Grand Old Lady of the Abbey was fascinating to me. Mary Craig, is that her name?
Mary Craig, but she went as May Craig.
And I wouldn't have known about her, but what would I know about her?
No, she's quite forgotten about, and again, that's kind of the aim of the book, you know. Glasnevin Cemetery is absolutely massive. It's 140 acres, over 1.5 million stories are people at rest.
But sure.
Most people come up to see the famous revolutionaries, you know, your Michael Collins's, Eamon de Valera's. But the aim of the book was to get away from the famous names, to look at your May Craigs, your cultural figures, fraudulent burial cases, all the rest. But, you know, May Craig, 950 productions in the Abbey.
Incredible.
Amazing stuff. 6 tours of America as well.
She was.
If anyone's going to the Abbey, if you're going up the stairs to go to your seats, look on the wall. There is a portrait to her on the wall in the Abbey today.
I know the portrait, but I never knew who it was.
And she's nicknamed the Grand Old Lady, as you said, of the Abbey.
And it says here, Grand Old Lady of Abbey dies, and De Valera was represented at her funeral.
Yeah, so a lot of famous dignitaries came along to her funeral,
And the other person I noticed in, because this is the TV, movies and stage section of the book, So Once Was I, about Glasnevin, Jimmy O'D,
yeah. Well, to me, a bit before my time, so I'd know him from King Brian and Derby O'Gill.
Yes, exactly. But I thought it was fascinating. You were saying that people don't stop at his grave anymore.
No, his grave is right down towards a circle of vaults called the Old O'Connell Circle, where Daniel O'Connell used to be.
Very weird.
Yes, creepy down that end, yeah. Halloween tours sometimes for young kids, we'd go down there and...
Oh, right.
There's not many ghost stories in Glasnevin, so you tend to make up a few for those tours, you know, but...
You're destroying your credibility there.
I know, sorry, the tricks of the trade, but down that end, there's a really small headstone, it's really weathered, and it's hard to find Jimmy O'D's grave, which is really sad, because he was such a big name.
And where is he in relation to those crypts, if you will?
If you're down at the circle, the old circle, down towards the Botanic Gardens and the Talca River, before you enter where the circle is, you just take an immediate left, and he's just down that end. So he's in what we call the garden section.
Right.
Now, his grave doesn't look that nice in terms of a garden sadly.
Isn't that interesting? And, you know, based on my being in Glasnevin Cemetery, the place you're describing is very close to where my grandparents are buried.
Really?
Yeah. And the weird thing is when you go in and you see Martin Whelan on a
headstone. I must look for the next time.
Thanks. Yeah. It gives you a bit of a fright, though, when you see
the most important
name.
People in the cemetery, of course.
Of course. Anyway, look, you are politics and history. That's your thing.
Yeah, that's my background.
That's your thing, right? And what is your involvement with Glasnevin?
So I first came across Glasnevin. I went to see a documentary about it called 1 Million Dubliners. So I was kind of dragged along by my dad to go and see the documentary.
And the reason it's called that?
So there's over 1.5 million people in the cemetery, but I think just saying 1 Million Dubliners is a nice title for the documentary because there's so many people there. But from the documentary, that piqued my interest, and then I applied for the position of tour guide in late 2015, and they kindly saw fit to give me the chance to show people around to the famous graves. And so I've been tour guiding there for the last 8 years.
And are you still doing your work with Trinity College?
So the tour guiding is now kind of hobby or part-time. The book was like an independent thing for me to do as something to spend the time. But Trinity Access Programs is the full-time job. Yeah.
You're the coordinator there.
Yes.
That's what you do. So look, let's talk about some of these people who are here. But I suppose if we start, because one of the tracks here is far too long. Luke Kelly.
Yeah, Luke, I suppose it's a good year to mention Luke. It's his 40th anniversary since his passing, just 44 when he died. And Luke himself was actually lucky to be around because his father, also called Luke Kelly, when he was a young boy, he was caught up in the Bachelor's Walk massacre after the Howth gun running in 1914. So if you Google Luke Kelly 1914...
Just comes back.
Yeah, there's a picture of a young boy in a hospital bed in Jervis Street, and that's the father of Luke Kelly. And he wasn't expected to survive, but... Luckily, he does. Luke himself, though, of course, famous for the Dubliners and Ronnie Drew and, you know, O'Donoghue's pub on Merrion Row, where he fell in with all that crowd. And he dies in 1984. And he's, of all the cultural figures in Glasnevin, you know, a lot of people come in from Michael Collins, but probably up there will be the likes of Luke Kelly and Brendan Behan as well.
Oh, yes, of course.
And, of course, both of those share the links to the Owl Triangle, the song, which... Luke made famous by singing. But Brendan Behan, of course, would have written the lyrics to that song from his experiences in the penal system.
Yeah. If only you'd done your research.
I know. I'm telling you.
I'd say if someone said, we're doing a quiz, you're the man.
Well, only if it's a very niche quiz or Glass Nevin, maybe.
It doesn't matter if it's a niche quiz.
Yeah.
Let's just remind people a little bit. I'm only playing it.
On Raglan Road of an autumn day, I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare. I saw the danger and I passed along the enchanted way, and I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day.
Great, Mr. Kavanagh. That's Raglan Road from Luke Kelly, which is quite something. When you think about some of the famous people that are there, there's a person, because of, I suppose it's a lyric thing, we've come across Margaret Bourke Sheridan.
Yes, the prima donna, yeah.
The prima donna, who was enormously successful, enormously popular in Italy.
Yeah.
And Puccini, of course.
And Toscanini, and all these guys.
Tell us a bit about her. She's buried in Glasnevin.
She's buried in Glasnevin. She's actually directly beside Eamon De Valera's grave, which would be regularly visited as part of any tour you do at the cemetery.
How do you get the two in?
Yeah, two for one. Well,
it was said
at the time during her lifetime that there was three people known outside of Ireland. It was Margaret Bourke Sheridan, La Prima Donna. It was the Count John McCormick, of course, and Eamon De Valera. So Glasnevin got two out of the three in the end,
right.
But Dean's Grange got Count John McCormick in the end.
He is, for sure.
Talk to me about Margaret Bourke Sheridan. I suppose, but Margaret Bourke Sheridan, if you go towards the end of her story, the 17th of April, 1958, there was a big performance in the Gaiety of Puccini's Lena
Malinesco.
That's the one, yes. And it's hard to get that out of there. It makes it sound like
I was there.
Yes.
No, I wasn't.
But Eamon De Valera was there that night, and the whole performance was interrupted, and the Italian ambassador gets up to say to the crowd, to announce that La Margherita Sheridan, La Prima Donna, had died at age 69. So that kind of shows the esteem she was held in.
Yes.
But she's from Castlebar. She had a very difficult upbringing, losing her parents at the age of six. And then she lost her father in 1901, just before she turned 11. So she was sent to the Dominican Sisters on Eccles Street. And she met a nun there called Mother Clement, who became her mentor, I suppose. And she introduced her to a singing coach called Dr. Vincent O'Brien, who had famously discovered the talent of Count John McCormick. And from those lessons, she competed in the Fech Ceoil, and she won the gold medal as mezzo-soprano.
Yeah.
And there's a cup named in her honour to this day for the most promising female vocalist in the Fech. But for Margaret Bourke Sheridan, that was her big break, so to speak. No, she'd perform in the Rotunda Rooms in 1908, and then a lot of beneficiaries and patrons would come to her aid, and that allows her to go to London and to study music over there in the Royal College. And her teacher, actually, funny enough, in the Royal College, her singing coach was a man called William Shakespeare. And she'd later perform the Verdi's Desdemona from Otello. So there's a nice lineage there. But from La Scala in Milan to Covent Garden in London, for 12 years, she was the wow factor in that operatic kind of arena. And, you know, she was the prima donna, and her biggest role was Madama Butterfly, and Puccini regarded her as the butterfly performance of them all. And Toscanini, as well, as I mentioned, you know, he adored Margaret Bourke Sheridan. But about 1926-27, with the rise of Mussolini in Italy, Toscanini was very anti-fascist and anti-Mussolini. But Margaret Bourke Sheridan, she had a lot of patrons who were pro-Mussolini and pro-fascist. And maybe she wasn't as bothered as she should have been at the time. Mm.
She was following her ambition. She was following the money.
Following the money, perhaps, yeah. And they fell out, so they only talked again in 1950 when he landed at Shannon Airport, and she said, "Where is my dove, Le Sheridan?" And they reconciled their differences then.
Isn't that interesting story?
But there's so much in her, like, you know...
Yeah.
Covent Garden, and then she performed with Giglio, the big operatic performer himself in Italy. And
but it's the link with Puccini and Toscanini. 100%. And it's astonishing.
Puccini was a personal coach to her.
And it's interesting because I have seen that said, I have a number of Puccini biographies, and she's mentioned. And
it's amazing.
That she's there. You know, that tells you how internationally she was respected.
Maggie from Mayo, from Castlebar.
Well, this is a while back, lads, but bear with us. This is Margaret Bourke Sheridan and Unbound of a Dreamer. Just saying, that is 19-ish...
29?
Yeah, 100 years old. Michael, by the way, put together a documentary on Margaret Bourke Sheridan. It went out on the 16th of June. Just if you want to hear that, lads, it's RTÉ Lyric FM, the features page, and you'll find it. And it's Maggie from Mayo.
Yeah, just one final thing about Maggie. When she was in her final months of life, she was sent to St. Vincent's Hospital on Stephen's Green at the time, and she was put in a suite where Arthur Griffith had been laid out when he died in 1922. And every time she went to the loo, she said, God, I can just sense the history of this place. She was very aware of her persona, and, you know, she was part of history.
Well, and she was.
And rightly so, yeah.
And rightly so. You're saying that she's beside De Valera?
Yeah, so...
astonishing.
Yeah, so Anna, before she died as well, Cyril Cusack, the actor, close friend to hers, he said, where would you like to be buried? And she says, oh, I'll be tippy-toes with Dev's secretary in Glasnevin. Her name is Kathleen O'Connell, and today they're right next to each other in the cemetery, right opposite Eamon De Valera. So all those links in life kind of maintained in Dev's in Glasnevin, yeah.
Peggy Dell, Noel Purcell, would be people that many people would remember from the Late Late Show. They would see them on that. Noel Purcell, the great actor, and Peggy Dell, great entertainer.
And Peggy Dell was someone that I, again, came across by chance when I was kind of coming up with this list of people to write about. And I found out, Peggy Dell, or Margaret Tisdall is her actual name. Peggy Dell was her stage name. But she's buried right down the back of the cemetery close to the Talca River in the St. Patrick's section. So it's nearly a 20-minute walk away from the Finglas Road to get there.
Right.
And I got down and it was unmarked. This great performer,
how
the piano
come it was
player.
Unmarked?
So both her parents were only children and they had one child, which was Peggy. So likely that the small familial circle meant when Peggy died, there was no one around to arrange for a headstone.
It's the thing, I'm an only child. I'm happily, was she married? No, she wasn't.
No, she wasn't married,
And I'm very, you know, I have children. But if you're a single person and your mum and dad are only children, you've no aunts or uncles or cousins.
No one, yeah.
So there's no one.
Yeah.
I often think it's...
So the line kind of stopped, in a certain way. And
absolutely.
On Facebook, I came across a GoFundMe page, and I know there's a man listening this morning called Rob Twamley. He's a local musician from the area, and he started this campaign to give her a headstone.
For Peggy Dell.
For Peggy, yeah.
I was going to say, she hardly did it.
No, she didn't do it herself. But the headstone went in 2021, and it has the musical stave, and it says, the music has ended, but the song lives on, which
how
I think
lovely.
Is really nice, but... You know, for Peggy Dell, she would have been in the same vaudevillian generation as Jack Cruise, Noel Purcell, Jimmy O'Dea as well.
Yeah.
And they would have performed on many stages around Dublin, like the Theatre Royal, for example. Funny enough, the Theatre Royal that was demolished, then the Screen Cinema came in. That's where I went to see 1 Million Dubliners, a documentary.
Go away.
And that's where Margaret Burke Sheridan performed in 1922. So again, there's lots of links there.
Huge linkage.
But Peggy Dell, you know, the piano performing, her father was a pit musician in the Olympia, very talented. And he gave her her first break. And in 1926, she set up her own little band. And a kind of a talent scout kind of spotted her. So off she went to London and she joined Roy Fox's big band. And at that stage, he couldn't quite fit Margaret Tisdall onto the billboards, so he suggested Peggy Dell. And that's where the stage name comes from. And later she joins Jack Hilton's big orchestra and she tours America with
huge.
That orchestra.
Jack a massive, orchestra, yes.
Massive deal. And you know, the likes of Joe Locke from Derry, he would sing with Jack Hilton as well. Yeah.
He went on a hunt. He found Peggy Dell and Noel Purcell on the Late Late Show from 1973. Now, this will blow your socks off.
You're right.
Yeah.
What brought you into my room? To my room, to my room. What brought you into my room? Said the mistress unto Dan.
I came here to court your daughter, ma'am. To draw the cam, I taught her, ma'am.
Ah, damn me, dear, you're welcome here.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan.
How come you drove it off her, me daughter, me daughter? How come you to know me daughter, said the mistress unto Dan?
Going to the well for water, ma'am, to draw the cam. I taught her, ma'am.
Ah, damn, tis you're the handy man.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan. She's a bunny girl, your daughter, your daughter, your daughter. A bunny girl, your daughter, and I like her well, says Dan.
She's a girl that's fit for any man.
Yeah.
And she has a graph for you, dear Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, me dear, you're welcome here.
Oh, thank you, ma'am, says Dan.
Now you can have me daughter, me daughter, me daughter. Now you can have me daughter, said the mistress unto Dan.
Great, great.
But when you take me, daughter Dan, you'll take me also, won't you, Dan? Ah, oh, Dan, me dear, you're welcome here.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan. Now this couple, they got married, got married, got married. This couple, they got married, Miss Elizabeth and Dan. And now he keeps her mother and her father and her brother and...
Oh, damn, tis you're the lucky man.
Agalanta, says Dan.
Noel Purcell, Peggy Dell on The Late Late Show in 1973. How long did it take you to put this together?
So over 4 years, yeah.
The amount of detail is quite staggering. It's also Once Was I, Warren With Me, Forgotten Tales from Glasnevin Cemetery. When you go through with this, I'm trying to find, as you said, the famous people are the famous people, the politicians, whatever. But trying to find those other people that would give people an interest in this. Are there tours that you can still do?
Yeah, there's daily public tours.
Now, daily?
There's different tours. The general tours, which gives you all the greatest hits, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's the lesser explored path, so there is a dead interesting tour.
It's called
the very interesting tour. But I'd highly recommend anyone to do a tour of Glasnevin, or even just to go up and walk the space.
Yes, yes.
The book is designed in chapters by theme, so you have murder mystery and
which is very clever.
TV, movies and stage. So you can do your own tour depending on your interest.
It's a very clever way of doing it because therefore you have an interest, and then you might go and say, "Well, hang on a second, let's have a look at something else."
Yeah, I have to mention Jack Cruise though, because we talked about all the other guys.
But you see, if you mention Jimmy O'Dea and you mention Maureen Potter, for example, you have to mention Jack Cruise.
Attended Peggy Dell's funeral in 1979 in Glasnevin, and he was recovering from pneumonia at the time, and only 4 days after insisting on going to see Peggy's funeral, he himself died.
He
was laid to rest right next to the mortuary chapel beside the big round tower to Daniel O'Connell. But he has a tiny headstone today, and most people just walk straight past Jack Cruise.
Good Lord.
The great entertainer, the comedian.
Hugely popular.
Noel Purcell's in Dean's Grange, so again, we didn't get
out
in the end.
But you got Peggy.
Yeah, we got Peggy, yeah.
You got Joseph Locke.
We got Joe Locke as well, which is an interesting one, because he was from Derry, you know, so he lied about his age to enlist in the British Army and later served with the police force in the north and became known as the Singing Bobby.
Yeah.
But he had grand notions about himself. He wanted to be it's kind of similar ilk to Count John McCormick, so he left the police and he went off to an audition in 1941. The auditions were being carried out by none other than Jimmy O'Dea in Belfast, looking for people for his shows down in Dublin.
And he gave him the gig.
Gets his big break.
Brilliant.
And from there, then, Joe Locke goes on to become this really famous name.
He was buried, I take it, in Glasgow.
He was cremated now, so
it's
a little bit different.
So it's unfortunate that we're going to play the song then, isn't it?
What one are you playing?
Blaze Away.
Oh.
Which was, I believe, Danny Cummins.
Yeah, spot on, yeah.
Is that a true story, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That Danny Cummins asked for that to be played at his cremation.
I think so, yeah.
I've heard that story. I
don't ruin a story with
I
the truth,
want it
Marty,
to be
you know?
True because I think Danny Cummins was also one of the great stage players in Ireland. Warren, thank you for coming in.
No problem
it's
at all.
It's fascinating. So once was I, Forgotten Tales from Glasnevin Cemetery. I have to play Joseph Locke.
Yeah,
I can't
perfect,
help it.
Yeah.
Keep the faith and good luck with the book.
Thanks a million, Marty. Yeah,
lovely.
We'll make a bonfire of our troubles and we'll watch them blaze away. And when they've all gone up in smoke cloud, we never worry should there come another day. And as the bonfire keeps on burning, happy days will be returning. While the band is playing, we'll watch our troubles turn them up.
So unfortunate, but there we are. That's Blaze Away, music from Joseph Locke. And thanks to Warren for coming into us this morning.